Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. Hi everyone, this is Klaatu. You're listening to Chronicles and Commons. Today I want to I'm not going to talk about dragons again. I do have more third-party dragons that I really, really want to talk about, but something local happened again, and I figured it was worth talking about just because it is kind of it's kind of timely, as it turns out, or at least it's timely because it happened. The thing that I wanted to talk about were fairies and flowers specifically, and the reason this is timely is because in the region that I live right now, there is a daffodil festival. This is unrelated to really anything other than the fact that historically, back in the late 1800s, someone, I think it was during Prohibition, interestingly, someone at a brew house, because they weren't allowed to do their normal brewing, decided to go out and plant a bunch of daffodils by the hundreds, which was quite a feat. And an expense, because the bulbs at the time they cost something like $100 per bulb. So it wasn't something that they did just out of sort of for want of anything better to do. It was something that they probably saw as either a service to the community or maybe a business opportunity. And it sounds like it was more like a service to the community, because ultimately the daffodils would be picked each year and then sold off for charity. So it was apparently a philanthropic activity, and this happened back in something like 1868 or something like, maybe it was 1915, because I think Prohibition was a little bit later than the 1800s here in New Zealand. But it was done at that time, and the daffodils just keep blooming. They don't stop. They're perennials, I guess is what they're called, where you plant it once and it just keeps springing back up. It's not like you have to replant the thing. And they survive, you know, they die off during the winter and then they come back in the spring. It's kind of how it all happens. And so I went to go see these daffodils and ended up going way too early in the year. As you heard in the previous episode, it's mid-autumn here, so it was kind of unreasonable to assume that the daffodils would be springing to life right now. But actually, I don't, how could it be mid-autumn if it's winter? I'm not sure about this this September 13 thing for the mid-autumn marker. But I guess by a lunar calendar, it must all make sense. But anyway, that's all previous episode stuff now. So I went way too early, and the flowers were not really out in full bloom yet, but it was a beautiful area, and lots of old ruins of the brewing house were there, and it was quite something to see. But one of the things that they had around the walk, it was a kind of a big nature walk, were little signs about the different kinds of flowers out, and all of them talked about fairies, and I thought that was quite interesting. Because certainly this is recent enough not to have actually been serious about fairies, I don't think. But apparently there's enough of a connection to different kinds of flowers and fairy folklore that they decided to talk about this in the signage. And so I've got quite an interesting and odd collection of sort of stories about the different flowers and what they mean and what they might indicate to someone who maybe is very bound to tradition from the old country, being Scotland and Ireland, and what it might represent. So the first one that I encountered was the primrose. Which some of those were actually in bloom, so I did get to see some primroses. But apparently the primroses are called the roses of the spring, which is kind of funny because they don't look anything like a rose. Like, if you know what a rose looks like and you saw a primrose, you would have no connection between those two things at all. Not in the way that they grow, not in the way that the petals look. It's just no connection that I could see whatsoever. Nevertheless, they're called roses of the spring or the primrose. The common name for the plant is the primula, Primula, which is derived from primus, meaning first or early. So, in other words, this is the first rose. And that is accurate, I would say, because going out into the fields and seeing these primroses and just a couple of daffodils kind of made it obvious that, yeah, primroses do bloom pretty early, it would seem. There's an old little rhyme or song about primroses. Will you buy my sweet primroses, two bunches a penny, all a growing, all a blowing? Who will buy my sweet primroses, two bunches a penny? So the phrase all a growing meant that the flowers could be planted by the buyers in their own gardens. So they would sell the primroses to people to then be planted, because they were still alive. The flower sellers of primroses would have gathered them from the countryside near their abodes, the fields of Islington, Paddington, or Lambeth. Hawking various wares was an occupation open to women of the time. So during the springtime, they would go out into the town and they would sell primroses with children who had picked them from the nearby woodlands. Younger children were left behind under the supervision of the older women, who could no longer walk so far to sell the flowers, and that was kind of the economy at the time. So it was believed also that you could use primroses to see fairies. If you were brave enough, you could find a fairy rock. Now, I don't know what a fairy rock is, and they didn't explain it on the sign, so I have no idea what that means. But you could find a fairy rock, and you could, as long as you had a bouquet of primroses consisting of some magical number. Unfortunately, it does not detail what that number is in this little blurb, so I don't know what that is. But if you had that, then you could touch their fairy rock, and you would be shown the door to the Feylands, or the Fairylands, or to the Fae, whatever, that demiplane that is where the fairies live. Now, if you touch the fairy rock and you have the incorrect number of primroses in your bouquet, unfortunately, you disappear. It doesn't exactly say what that means, but that's a danger. So you wouldn't want to do this unless you were very, very sure that you had the right number of primroses in your bouquet. Now, I love this idea because if you look at modules like the River King from Kobold Press, which I reviewed on the Mixed Signals website. If you go to mixedsignals.ml, you'll find a review of the River King. It's by Kobold Press. It's quite a good adventure about really set mostly in the Fae. And the Fae is a, potentially difficult thing to run, so seeing some mention of the Fae in a real world setting was actually quite helpful to me. And one of the things in the module is kind of the way that the players find their way to the Fae. And it can be a little bit convoluted sometimes and not very intuitive. So hearing this kind of real world, historic but real world mythos about how to find the fairies with a bouquet of primroses and then touching a fairy rock is brilliant to me. It really kind of opened up sort of like, okay, that's how this could be presented in this module. Now, in the module, and I won't say exactly what it is for want of spoilers, but for fear of spoilers, but there are things that you can, there are methods to reach the Fae, and unless you really thought about it, you wouldn't figure it out. And in many ways, I don't think that most people are familiar enough with legends around the Fae or the fairies that it would be intuitive for them to figure that out in the module. And I'm guessing that most people would have to be told explicitly by an NPC this is how you get to the Fae, or this is a legend about it, or something, or the DM has to trick them into doing the thing that they must do in order to get to the Fae, which I think is not impossible. I think that a DM could reasonably, there are ways to make that happen, but in that particular module, but it's just kind of interesting to hear, well, here's an idea. What if there was someone talking about primroses and this, or what if there was a really beautiful rock on this property and it's mentioned explicitly by the DM, so the players are probably going to go investigate it. And what if when they were investigating it, someone told them this story about the power of that rock or whatever. So that was kind of an eye-opener for me in a way. There's also a type of tree, a hawthorn tree, which there were a couple of hawthorn trees on this property that I saw the daffodils and the primroses at. And once again, the hawthorn tree itself is associated with healing powers and power over lovers. The hawthorn tree has a strong association with fairies as well. The branches and flowers were used as decoration in marriage ceremonies and for garland that would get hung up outside the doors of your abode to grant you good luck during the springtime. Anytime you want to cut down a hawthorn tree, you have to ask the fairies for permission. Now, once again, it didn't really say how you get confirmation of whether the permission has been granted or not, so I guess that's up to the person who's doing the cutting to know sort of what to look for, or maybe you just present the idea and if when you swing your axe at it, you don't miss swing and accidentally cut off your own head, then maybe you're good to go. I'm not really sure. But that's the idea. And then finally, there were some violets there, which I didn't actually see, but I'm assuming that maybe later in the season they would be there. And the violet had kind of an interesting tale around it as well. And it has nothing to do with fairies, but it's got a whole lot to do with superstition, which I think is in itself kind of interesting. And the superstition is simply that first of all, the ancient Greeks apparently considered the violet a symbol of fertility and love. They used it in love potions. Pliny recommended that a garland of them be worn around the head to ward off headaches, to calm tempers, and to induce sleep, which I think might still be kind of a thing. I mean, not necessarily wearing it around your head, but I feel like there have been teas out there that have been violet-based for sleeping. Maybe I'm thinking of another, a different, maybe I'm thinking of lilac or something. I'm not sure, but I feel like that's a thing. Leaves were worn to help heal wounds. But specifically, what kind of caught my eye, although that's all very interesting as well, is that the superstition that if you gather the first violet of the spring, then your dearest wish will be granted. And that sort of simple. That sort of really simple kind of superstition is just kind of fascinating to me because it's if you look at it sort of mechanically, it's just not that it's just not that complex, right? It is simple. It is a very simple and immediate thing. It's just if you happen to pick the first violet of spring, then your wish is granted. And that's it. That's the superstition. There doesn't need to be a magical number in your bouquet. There doesn't need to be a sequence of events that occurs. It is simply the superstition that if you do that, then that. And if we could think to put those kinds of really small, tiny little superstitions into the world of a fantasy adventure, I think that would just be brilliant. And I think the moment a player, for me, the moment a player decides to announce that they are going to go gather herbs or gather flowers or something like that, something that people just don't think of, I think that's an immediate reward for me. And while saying, okay, well, you now get a wish granted, might be a little bit dangerous for your campaign, Even so, that idea of, okay, this druid or this ranger or this fighter, for all I care, said that they were going to go, while the rest of the people were camping out, to go pick flowers. I just think that's a brilliant opportunity to, rather than ambush them with a wandering monster, to provide them with, oh, by the way, you've picked the first violet of the season, so the fairies will grant you a wish within their power. Easy, done. So yeah, I think that kind of flavor, and it doesn't have to be complex. Like I say, it doesn't have to be that they've found something or done some sequence of events that are really complex and calculated. It can just be something simple, like, oh, they stumbled upon the right thing at the right time, and so they get something special. I think that's a great way to reward people. It doesn't have to be a flower, it could be something else. It could be someone actually thinks to use their fishing profession. The profession that they took because they wanted early on to try to make their character sort of seem like a real person and not just a collection of numbers, but then the opportunities never come up, and now they think to use it. So what if they caught the first salmon of the season, or what if they caught a magical fish or something like that, or a fish that swallowed something very significant? Who knows? I think it's worth throwing in there. And finally, and I think I already said finally for Violet, but I did want to mention the one more thing, which is aconite, or aconite. Not really sure how to say it. It's a flower. Again, I didn't see it, but I saw a sign for it, and it had a pretty good story behind it as well. So in Greek and Roman mythology, Medea tries to kill Theseus by poisoning him by putting aconite in his wine, thought to be the saliva of a Cerberus, which is a three-headed dog that guards the underworld. Now, Hercules dragged Cerberus up from the underworld, where the underworld was guarding the underworld. So Hercules dragged Cerberus up from the underworld into the overworld, and when the dog turned his face away from the light, barking, he some of his saliva dropped onto the ground on the path. The saliva hardened in the soil and produced its lethal poison in the form of aconite. So that's where aconite historically, mythologically, comes from, is the saliva of the Cerberus. That's pretty exciting in itself. That's a great backstory. They're among the first flowers to appear in the spring, although, as I said, I didn't actually see them. They are fairly frost tolerant. They survive even under snow, apparently, and the leaves only expand fully when the flowers are nearly finished. They last for about 2 to 3 months, and then they kind of die down during the late spring. So they're kind of this flash in the pan, in a way, and they are apparently severely poisonous. They don't tend to be something that are attractive to eat because, I mean, they taste very acrid. You wouldn't want to chew on them for very long, apparently. I did not try. Again, they weren't out when I was around that I could, as far as I could tell, but they are poisonous nevertheless. And I think, once again, just in terms of realism in a fantasy world, that herbalism of declaring that certain things are poisonous, it's just kind of important to be aware of. But the backstory of that poison, I think, is really subtle and really interesting to think about. And it's certainly kind of fun to think, well, we can give this plant, which we're declaring as a lethal poison in the game world, we can give it an interesting backstory. Not for any mechanical reason. It's just it's a thing that we can do to make the world seem that much more alive and historic. That's all I have on flowers for you today, flowers and fairies. I hope that it was interesting and inspiring, and I will talk to you next time. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.